Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the New Media Show. My name is Todd Cochran. I want to welcome you to the show today. We got a great show. We're going to have two guests on, so we're going to be going kind of fast and furious this morning. But it's great to be back in the chair here this morning. Rob, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Todd. It's great. Seattle sunny and blue skies, so we're in good shape up in Seattle. So spring is definitely sprung here. And so it's always a good day Saturday morning to talk podcasting and new media. So let's get going.
Well, of course, we want to welcome our guest this morning is Mr. Rick Calvert from the New Media Expo. Good morning, Rick. How are you?
Good morning, Todd and Rob. I'm doing well.
Is your hair on fire?
Actually, I'm feeling strangely calm.
So when you guys actually pack up and go to Vegas, Wednesday or Thursday, or when you guys head out?
The 11th. So I think that's a Saturday.
Oh, so you guys don't get in until Saturday then, huh?
Yeah, the NAB guys, they're leaving like tomorrow. Right. They have a lot more work to do than we do.
So you just haul in your, you don't have that much setup. The Ferguson folks or whatever, not Ferguson or whatever those folks are, they set most of the stuff up.
Freeman,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, we have a couple of people that'll be there before I get there to do the real early stuff. But yeah, it's a couple of days is all it takes us to set up.
Well, that's good. Well, I'm leaving Friday night. I get into Vegas Saturday morning and, my team arrives Saturday and I guess through Sunday. So we're excited about coming out to Vegas and the show and everything that's going to be happening. So what, kind of get us caught up. What's the latest and what should people expect when they come? And I want to talk just a little bit today, too, about the experience people should expect. But go ahead.
Well, I guess the latest big news is Chris Jericho replacing Dennis Miller as host of the Podcast Awards or co-host with Emily Morse. I don't know if, Rob, you may know because of your Podcast One relationship that Dennis and Adam were doing a podcast together and now they are not. And so Dennis couldn't make it to the award show, but Chris Jericho, we're pretty excited to have. He's obviously a pretty hardcore podcaster as well as the other stuff that he does with his wrestling and his heavy metal band. And he's actually hosted award shows before. I've seen him as a host of the Metal Gods award show, which is a heavy metal music award show. So he brings a lot of energy to the event. We're excited about that.
Oh, well, yeah, I would agree. I think Chris is a great pick for that. I think he'll keep the audience engaged and fully entertained in the process. No question about that.
He's a fun guy. Yeah,
he is.
So, Rick, yeah. Did your guys' process on your first year of dealing with the podcast awards, was it a little more or than what you thought it would be? Or
a lot harder. Todd, than I thought it would be. You know, I've always respected what you've done with the podcast awards, more so now than ever. Especially, you know, and you know this already, and you warned me ahead of time that the website needed to be redone.
Yeah.
Just that everything's so difficult to update on the site.
Yeah.
And, we've had lots of people say, hey, this thing is wrong and this thing is wrong. And the reason that is because first we have to find it, then we have to figure out how to fix it. And a lot of people don't realize this, but when you do something once a year,
yeah,
you kind of forget.
Yeah.
When you come back to it a year later, how you did it the last time.
And I'd done it enough. I knew where stuff was. So I was kind of helping you out in the background and keeping stuff edited on the website. But the
other part as well, which again, you've known forever and through our involvement in the award show, I mean, people are so passionate about it, and the fans and the podcasters, it is a great experience overall. It was hard work. So anyway, we'll rebuild the site now this year. The voting, everything's done.
Yep. It didn't collapse, even though we had to boost the server like two times.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It was in the millions, the votes.
Good.
We just sending off to the awards company to print the trophies and We're excited. It looks like a whole bunch of the finalists will be there.
Oh. I mean,
a really big percentage of the finalists. You know this, and people who have been finalists in the past know this. We give them free passes to the show.
Right.
All the finalists and all the categories. And so quite a few of them will be there. So I expect quite a few of the winners will be there, which makes it exciting. And obviously, it'll be a bigger stage we've ever been on before. We'll have a little red carpet this year for the first time ever. But we thought for the 10th anniversary, raising the bar again, which we've done over the last couple of years, is the right way to go. So, yeah, that's why I said I'm feeling calm because
good.
Podcast Awards voting is over, so I don't have to deal with anything till the show now. The schedule is set. That's gone off to the printer. You know, it's all over but the crying now.
Well, good. Well, I do want to also mention we've actually got a pass for giving away on the show today, and so we've got a winner, and our winner is Bill Conrad. Bill, congratulations! I know you already had a floor pass, but now you are the lucky possession holder of a VIP full access, everything goes ticket to the show. So we'll get your name over to the staff at New Media, and we'll get your pass upgraded or whatever they got to do to it to make that happen. So, Bill Conrad, we had a number of people that sent in, and I had asked, make sure you're going to go. I want you to confirm you're going to go. And about 30 of you did, and we did a random drawing. And Bill, you're the winner, my man. So congratulations on that. And Rick, thanks for you guys, Bill, for offering up a ticket or a VIP pass for one of our listeners.
Absolutely.
Let's see here. I do have a message. Don Bain needs to talk to you, Rick.
I'm calling Don Bain. I know. You do that a lot for me, Todd.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Hey, so this show's going to be a little different because in years past, you guys have largely been kind of on your own in your own venue. Now, this year, you're in conjunction, I guess, I don't know, or in partnership with, or I don't know exact terminology with NAB. What should an attendee expect this year?
The official term is co-located with NAB.
Okay.
But it really is a partnership with NAB. And even more so now, and I'll tell you a little bit about that. I had an interesting, a really, really good phone call on Thursday with Chris Brown, who's the executive vice president of the NAB show. By the way, they like to call it NAB show.
Okay.
NAB is the National Association of Broadcasters. The show is the National Association of Broadcasters show. And they're sticklers about that, and I appreciate that. We like people to say our name right too. Anyway, the biggest difference for people who've been to the show before is that it's 1,000 times bigger than ever before.
Yeah.
You're looking at 1,000 exhibiting companies there. And to put that in perspective, at New Media Expo, we usually have 75, 100 exhibitors. There are booths at NAB that our entire show will fit inside more than twice.
Right.
So, for example, the Sony booth or the Canon booth, a Panasonic booth. For podcasters, for people who do web video, the amount of gear that you'll see there, I mean, we've just never had anything like that before. And everything from, GoPro cameras and all the competitors for GoPro. I mean, you think about that. If you go to, there's the there's a lot of podcast kind of festivals and smaller podcast events and smaller web video events like VidCon is a great fan expo, and there's one called Daily Something in Florida. I don't know if you know the name of that one, Rob, but anyway, typically they'll be about the same size as our show, and you might have, again, 100 exhibitors at the most, and you might see somebody like GoPro there, or you might see somebody like B&H Photo there, and they might have some cameras on display. At NAB, every camera, microphone, software, music, licensed music, effects, green screen, all the technology you can imagine. Every one of those manufacturers is there. And with every camera you can imagine, from the low end to the high end, and every microphone from the low end to the high end, and everything in between that helps us create content. So it's just, I've said this before on your show, I've said it before to both of you in person. I mean, it's just a different level for all of us. You know, their CEOs of Sony will be there.
Yep.
But that's never happened at our show before. And so now multiply that by about 500 other companies who will have their CEO there. And this year we'll have Amazon Fire TV at the show. That's never happened before. YouTube, who's not a sponsor this year, but they're in the show, I'd say, in a more significant way than they've ever been, even when they were a sponsor. There's just a different level of value to them with us and NAB, because they don't exhibit at NAB either. But with us and NAB combined, there's a different value proposition for them than there's never been before. So one thing, I know that was a long answer.
No, it's okay. I think one thing people will want to remember is, and it's like 40-some football fields worth of vendors. That's really the truth. That's it's huge. And you're going to need 2 full days just to walk the floor. So have a plan, you know, get in that exhibitor list and see who you want to see and map your show. Cause if you don't, you're not going to get to it all.
You physically cannot get to it all. So you have to prioritize,
You
know, what do you need? What's important to you? And you should leave a little bit of free time just to kind of randomly let things happen.
Right.
Right.
And I've got about 25 companies I want to see. And for me, I don't know if I'm going to get to them all. It's also that time-space continuum. You know, if you want to see a vendor in the South Hall and they're in the back, that's, you know, from the North Hall, and to get to that through the traffic of people, that's 30 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, at a minimum, 30 minutes.
And if, you know, you're a popular guy like Todd or Rob, people stop you along the way.
Yeah.
So now it's an hour.
Yeah, it's ugly. It really, really is. And if you're and of course, if you're carrying a camera and they think you're pressed, then you're getting the PR people are trying to grab you and distract you too. So there's a lot to see.
Just to put it in perspective, again, for people who've been to our show before, you can walk the New Media Expo show floor if you're taking your time and talking to people in about 2 hours.
Yep.
Right. And so by the second day, you're kind of doing laps and just, you know, right. You've already seen those people, already talked to them. Maybe you didn't stop because they were talking to somebody else the day before. And again, with NAB, you physically in 4 days cannot see it all.
Yeah. And they're going to be. And we're worried about having enough people at the show, because sometimes you could be 5 deep and waiting to talk to people. It'll take longer to talk to people too.
Can I tell you real quick about my phone call with Chris the other day?
Sure.
So, he sent me an email and said, "Hey, just want to chat real quick and see how you're feeling about everything." So, and as I said, Chris is the guy who runs the NAB show. He is the top guy, and I've known him for about probably 15 years now. And I told him 8 years ago when we first started New Media Expo, Chris, you know, one day you guys, we're going to co-locate with you guys, or you guys are going to buy us because we're the NAB of the future. And he kind of laughed. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he called me yesterday or 2 days ago now to say, "How's it going? You know, what do you guys think of the arrangement so far this year? You know, we think we can do a lot of things better next year. And we're really excited about this. We know you guys are bringing a few thousand new attendees to our show. And again, NAB has 100,000 attendees. But we're going to bring 3,000 new people, 4,000 new people to NAB show. There's a little bit of overlap there. But I would say 90% of our attendees have never been to NAB show before."
Right.
We talked for about an hour, but the entire focus of the conversation is how do we do it even better next year? So again, Todd and Rob, you guys know this. We didn't announce this until August of last year that we'd be at NAB show. I can tell you now that we'll be back at NAB Show in 2016, even bigger and better. We're talking about how do we take the podcast awards and the web TV awards and the exhibits and the other stuff that we do to another level again next year. And it was just really exciting. We talked about some strategic things about how their schedule coincides with other events where there's crossover with us, but maybe not crossover with them. Other companies that we both would like to attend that aren't coming to either of our shows right now. So, for example, Netflix, I think, should be at our show in a pretty significant way. Amazon, as I mentioned before, YouTube is another one. And there's quite a few others, Hulu, that are part of our ecosystem. And people that are part of the NAB ecosystem in some way now, like NewTek, who has been great in supply gear to us for many years now, and they've got a huge booth at NAB Show. And Todd, again, you're using a TriCaster right now. Live stream, and there's so many other people that have switchers there at NAB Show. So we were just talking about, how do we, again, take this to the next level? How do we integrate those audiences between the two shows? So, because if you look at our conference program, we feel like we've got great speakers, great education. But if you look at the NAB Show program, you're going to see, again, some executives that we've never had at our show speaking there that you have access now to that you never did before. And in the past, we're talking about what we do with new media. They're talking about what they do with traditional media. And both of us are talking a little bit about each other. You know, we're saying, okay, new media should or traditional media should pay attention to us because of these things, and there should be opportunities there. And they're saying the same thing about us. This is the first time they're going to be doing it together. And again, we see the future of this fostering those relationships and that communication together between new media content creators and traditional media companies in a way that's just never happened before. And this is the moment in history for new media that I've been pushing for 8 years now, and Todd and Rob, that you guys have been a part of for a decade.
I think it's going to be exciting. Rob?
So are you guys thinking that there's going to be a lot of more attendees to the new media sessions, you know, on our side, coming from the NAB Show side?
There definitely will be.
Are the meeting rooms a lot larger to support that, so how do you see that playing out?
Good question. So we always have the problem where some sessions are over full and some sessions aren't. And you kind of never know which one is going to be that way. And I guess this year, we know less than ever before, because we don't know which of our sessions are going to be popular with the NAB crowd. So we've got three passes, and I know next year we're going to go down to just two. So there's an exhibits pass, and then there's a conference pass. And then we've got a VIP conference pass. And so you can get into our sessions with the conference pass or the VIP pass. So some sessions we kind of know that are going to be big if you've got a really big speaker in the room, but that's not always the case. Sometimes, for example, last year, Pat Flynn and Michael, I'm forgetting his last name now. Yeah, who's a really big draw. Pat Flynn had more people in his room than Michael did. And they had a little bit of a bet, and Pat was standing room only out the door. So there's always a little bit of, you don't know who's going to be that draw. And this year with the NAB audience, I have no idea. But so they have a pass called the Smart Pass. NAB Show, again, put in perspective, has about 10 different conferences all happening at the same time, in addition to this gigantic trade show. Mm-hmm. And so they have a thing called a Smart Pass where you can go to any one of those conferences. And so you could go to the Post-Production World Conference at one point. You could go to the Online Video Conference at one point. You could go to the New Media Expo Conference or some other general NAB sessions in between. Mm-hmm. So there are several thousand of those people. And I just don't know which of our sessions they will show up to. To answer your question, Rob, yes, some of our rooms are bigger. some of them are not. So I would say you should get there early to make sure you get a seat. That is one thing we do. The VIP pass holders have a guaranteed seat. So, again, I just don't know. We'll find out this year when we get there.
So is there any sense of what percentage of the attendees to the NAB show have those access passes to all of the conferences?
I don't know what the percentage is, but it's a couple thousand people who have the smart passes. So okay. If you add that to our audience, let's say our audience is 3,000 people, you add 2,000 more, that's like a pretty significant increase. So again, our session has 10, our conference has had 10 concurrent sessions at any given time. NAB has 75, 85, 90 concurrent sessions happening at any hour.
Yeah. So, and I think too, what you'll see is their rooms are, you know, some rooms are at capacity, some rooms have 20 people in them. So I think they have the same, you just don't know.
Yep.
Yeah.
One other thing, I guess, is news that we didn't talk about since I was here last, we put in the newsletter, is our attendees get to go to the NAB. They call them general sessions. We call them keynotes. And there are two NAB general sessions that I think are really interesting for our attendees. One is with the Robert Kirkman and Steven Yeun and the president of AMC, so the creator of The Walking Dead, one of the stars of The Walking Dead. He's Glenn. He plays Glenn on The Walking Dead, and president of AMC Television. I think that's going to be an awesome session that our people are going to be very interested in. And the other one is the chairman of the FCC, who is, I think he comes every year to NAB. He's been there for the last several years.
Yep.
And we have all talked about, you know, FCC regulations that affect content creators. This is coming from the horse's mouth, and obviously with the net neutrality rules that they've just come down with, this does affect all of us. And we've never had that kind of access before, and I would highly recommend that our attendees go to that and hear what he has to say and ask questions. This is your opportunity to hear it from the guy in charge.
Rick, we're down to about 3 minutes here before we have to switch out and get Bob in, but I guess folks, it's not too late, right? They can still get a ticket and they can still come.
You can still get a ticket, absolutely.
And
you can come up at the day of the show. If you find yourself in Las Vegas and you haven't got a ticket yet, you can come. By the way, you remind me, Todd, since the last time I was here, you guys may have talked about it. We have a new look to the website, finally.
Yep, your website did update. Do you like the nice? I know you were pulling your hair out and trying to get the... trying to get it online, and it is online, so
we still have work to do, but it's so much better than it was. So,
and the only thing it I would say is they need to work on the schedule thing. That's the only thing is kind of hokey, but other than that,
by the way, that's the NAB schedule. Which we tried integrating with that this year, and yeah, it's a little frustrating. We've used Skedge.org for, I don't know, several years now, which has always worked good, not perfect. I always had some frustrations there too, but it did the job for us. And this one is totally different now. And yeah, we've heard other people say it's a little difficult to navigate.
Well, folks, go over to NMX Live or NMXEvents.com. Either one of those will get you the website. And Rick, we will see you on Sunday. And or at least I will. Probably Rob, you'll be in on, I don't know, see you Monday too or whatever, but we'll see you at the show.
I'm in early on Sunday morning.
Okay.
I know you're gonna have a busy week, so good luck
and good luck.
And we'll see you at the show.
Thank you both.
Take care.
Okay. Hey, thank you.
Bye guys.
Yeah, bye bye.
Yeah, bye bye.
Whew, a lot going on there.
Definitely.
I don't want to be in his shoes.
Yeah, it's a lot to take on. It's a big show, and it's a big integration partnership, and there's a lot of moving pieces. So, you know, I think as he continues this relationship, it's it's going to get better and better because there's going to be things that he, you know, that the team, the New Media Expo team learns about where the strengths are and the weaknesses in the relationship and the technology and all that stuff. And it will get better. And I think that the same thing applies to the podcast awards, you know, between now and next year, there's a lot more time for things to be worked on and streamlined and those kind of things. So I think it's a first year event for this, and there's a lot of unknowns and a lot of opportunities at the same time.
The I think too is the sheer magnitude, you know, and I'm just, you know, I'm already looking at my schedule that, you know, I've got press wanting to interview, and it's, you know, everything we're trying to get done, it's almost like, because, you know, we're really tight on our dev cycle in order to get what we want to get done and announce at the show. And so he's stressing that out. And, you know, it's going to, the days, you know, we're all getting on airplanes on Friday. So, you know, it's either going to be done or not, you know, and, but yeah, so everyone's putting, you know, looking at all our handouts and putting the last touches on them and going to the printer, you know, from an exhibitor standpoint. And I still have about 50% of my presentation to put together. So that's going to get done this weekend. So I have a week to tweak it. But oh, man. Oh, man. Oh, man. Oh, man. That's all I can say.
Well, it is, it is complicated to work with the Las Vegas Convention Center. I mean, of all the places in the country to do a booth, you know, or an exhibit, it's probably the most complicated.
Well,
and expensive.
Well, yeah, I've been on this rodeo a few times with them, so I've got their system.
Well, you've done it a few times, right?
Yeah, so for me, it's not so painful. And I also know people over there now, so you know, it's kind of horrible when you actually know Freeman people. That, you know, those folks don't change; they're the same people show up. You go leave one show, and the next week it's the same Freeman people that are working, and
Cox and
all those guys. Folks. Yep. Yeah. But so. And it's not cheap; very expensive.
Yeah, that is true. So it'll be interesting. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I think it will be a quite a different experience than what we've typically had at a New Media Expo. Just like you guys are saying, just the scale of it and the companies that are participating. I wanted to get an idea from Rick, and I'm glad he had some numbers to share. That there's a couple thousand people that get those access passes to the conference. So,
but most of the show at the NAB show, most of the action happens on the floor.
On the floor. Yeah, exactly. And that's where most of the attendees are.
Right.
Too. So I think you're being an exhibitor on the floor and getting exposed to all that traffic is really where the action is.
Yeah.
The whole conference side is probably what going to be maybe five or 6,000 people that attend that huge conference.
You want my prediction?
Yeah.
And this is probably, I shouldn't say this, but my prediction is that the attendees are going to be so overwhelmed that I bet you session attendance is down. That's my prediction. And here's why.
Well, it's so huge. You get lost out there walking around and you don't make it back to your session in time.
Right.
Yeah, right. No, I can see that happening.
Oh, yeah. Because of the lure of going out and seeing all this stuff is, I almost wish that the sessions and the show were separate, you know?
Yeah, so like do the conference before the exhibition. Is that what you're saying?
Right.
Yeah.
Right, you know? And, it's just like, phew. Because, you know, I'm just looking at my schedule. It's like block, 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 block. And I'm like, where am I going to get, two, 3 hours? And what it'll be Thursday around noon. I'll tell the guys in the booth, all right, see ya. I'll be back at 4, Yeah. And, of course, then all the VIPs are already gone. The people you want to talk to, they're there Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So, you know, they have left. The last day of the show usually is you know, if you want to make time, that'll be the day to really make time in and around the show. So,
yeah. And I, you know, it's possible, Todd, that we may have a fourth panelist on our session. Yeah. I don't think I've told you that yet, but I kind of got word. I can't share who it is yet until it's, you know, 100% confirmed, but, yeah.
So did you ask, or did someone ask you to add someone?
I came through Rick and Dave. So
Should be interesting. Is it going to cause fireworks?
No. It's it's somebody that you've known for a long time. So
all right, good. Well,
it just hasn't been confirmed, so I don't want to announce it here.
Oh, okay.
So
well, I think the I don't know where Bob is. I'm looking, and
yeah, I think he sent his Skype number in the email I sent over to you. His Skype address.
When did you send that?
I sent it this morning before the show.
All right, let me look here. And there I see.
Okay, he wrote back. He's ready to go.
All right. I don't see the email that you're talking about, Rob.
Oh, you don't?
Oh, hang on. I see it.
Okay. It's Bob Heil Mac. All run together. Yeah, I think he was wanting us to call him, I think, but it wasn't clear.
Hello there.
Hey Bob.
Good morning.
How are you?
Wow, look at Rob. We have definitely been outclassed. Look at the background behind Bob. That is
hey, don't Bob. Take this wrong.
Geek Fest here.
This is really a lab for my ham radio stuff where I develop all the microphones, and that's only half of it. There's the rest of it.
Oh my goodness.
All of that stuff's been with me since 1956. The newest one, I think, is about 1980. But no, this is where I spend my time and developing these great products and doing all the broadcasts from here. I just got off a radio show here locally that I do on Saturday morning. How are you guys? Everybody all right?
We're doing fantastic.
Any morning that you're vertical is good, right?
Yeah. Well, and above ground, right?
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Well, Rob, why don't you go ahead and introduce Bob so folks that don't know him can.
Yeah, so welcome, Bob. We're speaking to Bob Heil, who's the founder, creator of Heil Sound, which is the maker of a very popular microphone in the podcasting space called the Heil PR40. And there's a, you know, I don't think Todd and I are using, you know, a Heil PR40 right now, but we're big fans of of your products, and it's an honor to have you on the show. You're a legend in the audio space, and I know you do a show with Leo on Twit called Ham Nation. It'd be great to hear about that show and what you guys talk about on that. But welcome to the show.
Well, sorry to step on you, Bob. Well, I will say I got a consolation prize. I do have a Heil Boom. These are by far the best booms in the space. And I've tried a lot of them. And this one is, I think, going on 5 years old. Never sag, nothing. This is the best boom in the space. But I do have a PR40 up there, but haven't used it in a while. But it is a great mic.
Well, we try to keep things above the technology, because the problem is there has been nothing new in the microphone industry for 40 years. Oh, they might look new and all of that, but there's been nothing new in technology. That's the key word. And I started building microphones after I came out of the rock and roll industry. We We made a pretty good move. It was starting about 1966. Got into the music scene. I was a Hammond organ dealer because my whole deal is I started as a young kid as a pipe organist at the Fox Theater in St. Louis, Missouri. And I learned to listen and voice all of these crazy pipes. There's about 6,000 of them in that. And what's so important about that is that I learned to listen. Listening is a mental process. A lot of people hear, but they don't listen. And I was blessed that I was put into that that position to learn to listen. Well, in 96, I opened a store, and I got really involved in helping people fix their amplifiers and build things and so on. And it ended up that we had taken a bunch of big old speakers that came out of the Fox Theater and built this massive, that's only one half of it, sound system, which I didn't know no one else was doing that. And I hooked up with a promoter who says, "Hey, I got this group. Can you help me?" And so that group is the James Gang. And we hooked up with did the tours for the James Gang. Joe Walsh and I found out we were ham radio operators, and the whole friendship changed. And we've been buddies all these years. About 8 years ago, Joe said to me, "You got to do something for me." And I said, "What's that?" "You got to do something with this." And I said, "What's wrong with that microphone?" He said, "It doesn't sound very good." He said, "There's, we got to do something about it." He said, I was at the time building ham radio microphones. And of course we are. We're one of the largest manufacturers on the planet for headphones and microphones for the ham radio industry. And the key factor of all of that is articulation. Everybody misses it. I don't care what it is. Neumann, Electrovoice, Audex, Shure, you name it. None of them understand the word articulation. We'll go up and equalize it. No. Joe says, "I don't want to have to equalize it. Build it in the microphone." And so it was kind of interesting. Here's two crazy hams at his kitchen table. And we started just thinking and dreaming and drawing. And I went back to my lab here, and bingo, we came up with some very incredible things. And the secret of it, and it's not a secret, it's just the fact that the technology is so bad today. "Yeah, I'll do something for you. I'm going to unplug this microphone. We're not playing with mixers or anything. I'm unplugging a microphone." I plug in an SM58. What happened? And this is supposed to be the great microphone of whatever. And what's really bad about it, not only does it not sound good, but I got to be right in front of it. If I move off any at all, it's gone. All audio changes. And so you got to be right in front of it. Joe says, "Don't do that." He says, "Build me a microphone that I only have to move around." He says, "Build me a microphone that stays where I put it." And so we did. Changing microphones again. Now this is our PR22. This microphone is an amazing vocal microphone. But what's so amazing about it is we figured out how we could do this. I'm 90 degrees off axis. There is no microphone that'll do this and not change tone. Well, all of ours do. And we learned it from antenna theory, believe it or not. Phasing is so important in all of this. And then he said, "Hey," he said, "remember that big antenna you had up all years ago?" Well, we're talking about big antennas, 50 feet wide, 50 feet high. We used to take this antenna and aim it to the moon and bounce our signals off the moon. But what was so incredible about it, all these things had, the elements had to be in or out of phase. If you turned it backwards, if I turned it to the East Coast, they couldn't hear me on the West. And vice versa. Well, do that to the microphone, Joe said. So we did. I'll go back to the PR-40. PR-40 is an amazing piece of audio. And again, it's that same technology that we've put in all of them. I'm 90 degrees off the side. You can't do this with right. any other phone.
It's true.
No. You can't do it. And why? Because they haven't played with new technology. That's really the big deal. This is a large diaphragm, 1.5 inches. But here's the kicker. This is an amazing piece that you will never forget. And if you aren't using it, you soon will. All of these microphones have no rear rejection. They're down by, maybe 15, 20 dB. Well, we used that antenna theory and took the phasing to the max. And when I turn this microphone around, you will not hear me. Listen to this. Here we go. It's gone. It's 40 dB down. I'm talking into the front. Now, here right. I am in the back. It's 40 dB down. Do that with any microphone. Well, you can't. You're going to get about 20 down. Well, that's not good enough. And then you get these guys, I can do my walls. You don't need to do anything. You need, first of all, to close talk the microphone. That's another thing you can't do with a lot of them because the proximity effects is nuts. So we've designed all of these wants that Joe, one of the greatest artists in music and sound, wanted, and that's what we do here. I listen intently to my artist, to my customers. What do you want? And then we do something about it. Every single microphone that we build was built from the invitation of an artist. And so we're very, very pleased that we can do this, but we don't pay attention to the old stuff because it all went away. And everybody said, well, you need to get in the broadcast industry. I said, I do. Well, yeah, here's the one. So I'm going to unplug the PR4.
I hate this mic.
And here's the great RE27, $700 worth of microphone.
And you have to have an amplifier from God behind it.
Well, here's the deal. If I move off to the side, what happened? It changed horrible. Tone is not there.
Yeah.
I have to be right in front of it. It's way down in gain. But here's the thing that really, really took notice. I said, what happened? What is all this stuff on the side? It must be marketing because it certainly doesn't have any rear rejection. It's still there. What's the deal? The deal is ego and habit. That's right. What drives it.
Right.
Ego and habit. And I said, we're going to fix it. So we unplug the RE27. And we put a PR40 in it. Hello. There is absolutely no one on the planet that could listen to that and not say, whoa. And
well, it's
we
a
have
much warmer sound. Yeah, definitely.
40 down, 40 down, and we have an Omni front. What's interesting about it, it's our own pattern. It's a Heil pattern. It's Omni on the front and nothing out the back. I love cardioid. I don't want cardioid out the back. I don't want anything out the back.
Right.
But we did it, baby. They're all giving it to you. And what's even worse are these condensers. Oh, man, do I hate condensers. I hate condensers. But that's just a little bit of what we're doing here. And let you take it from here. But it's a little bit of a history round of Heil Sound.
So, Bob, do you make any cardio condensers, or are you all dynamic?
No. Why would I?
That's a good point.
You know, about the first year we did the podcast awards, we were looking for prizes to give to the podcasters, and my good friend Paul Figiani says, hey, Todd, why don't you reach out to Bob Heil? They've got this new mic. It's called the PR40. It's awesome. He says, see if you can get a couple of those. So, Bob, I don't know if you remember or not, but I emailed you and I said, hey, we're doing this thing called the Podcast Awards. I need a couple of mics. And you graciously donated two mics. Now, here's a little history for the audience. Who won the first two People's Choice Podcast Awards? Rob, do you remember?
I think didn't didn't Leo win?
Leo and Adam Curry. So yeah. Leo yeah. got his first PR 40 from
the podcast awards.
From the podcast awards. And guess what mic he uses to this day is the PR 40.
Well, all of his mics yeah, in the studio all of us are PR 40s.
Yeah. 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 And so that's just a, I'm hoping, Bob, that if you ever want to give a guy a little bit of credit for moving some mics, Paul Fagiani is the man. He's the guy that probably helped you sell, I don't know, X number of mics, but he definitely helped it off a lot. So I don't know if you remember that or not.
Yeah, I do. Leo talks about it on his radio show every once in a while. Somebody will call in and tell him how nice he sounds, and it's he'll give you the spiel that he won at a podcast convention, and he's never found one that worked better. So we're very blessed by that. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So, and it's just, you know, it's kind of, it's ironic how, you know, one person says, hey, why don't you, you know, reach out, and you guys were gracious enough to donate a couple of them, and then we, you know, handed them out, and boom, it's like, I just saw this morning someone sent out a Facebook post or something. They got some new gear, and bam, he bought a Heil PR40. So it's you know, still selling mics. I think that's great. And has the mic evolved at all, or is it still the same mic from day one? Have you tweaked it at all?
No. The microphone is exactly what we came up with. The only difference is we have a custom shop. And we can do any kind of finish, and we're just starting now to bring online the black with the gold screen, and we can do just about any color that one would want. We do a lot for the artists when they go out there for their different sets and stuff. We have an in-house custom shop that we can do that. But and the PR40 has only changed color, and that's it.
Right.
I just right. can't make it better.
So is it still, or is it your most popular mic, or is there's a mic that you sell more of?
Well, the PR35, the incredible vocal microphone we make, is probably equal to it at this point, because we got everybody from Carrie Underwood to Charlie Daniels, and hundreds of them, hundreds that have found out the incredible articulation, rear rejection, and dynamic range and transient response. Those are the things that make Heil sound totally separate from all the other microphones. I don't know why, but they just forgot about it all. They're just copying things that are 40, 50 years old. And we really pay attention to all of those factors, because that's what makes the microphone work so well.
You know, I'm a big fan of an analog chain. And, you know, this audio chain here goes to a really nice preamp. I've got a, you know, a Mackie mixer down there. And the only thing I really transfer digitally is I firewire over into the recording platform. And I'm just, that sound to me is what I want my audience to hear. Now, the question that I have for you is man, these USB mics have just been, people are going crazy over them because they're easy and they don't have to have an extra chain. What's your...
A lot of them sound bad.
Yeah, you want to go bang, bang, bang with the mics that some of the mics they're using, but what do you think about these USB, you know, you get a mic with a USB plug on it. I can't wait to hear this response. What do you think of those?
Have you ever heard one that sounded good?
No.
Okay, thank you. That's the answer.
Why is that, easy. Bob?
It's easy. I can plug it in and it works really good. No, it doesn't. And it's so much easier to get a little mixer today. They make little mixers for $40-$50, and you'll have everything you need. You had a little bit of equalization if you need it, but you have USB out that you can drive anything with it. And you have headphone monitors, and you have line out, line in. And for podcasters, it's perfect. You don't want a USB microphone. You want a little mixer that you can maybe plug in a CD player or music from other sources, and you can have a couple of microphones if you have a guest in your studio. You have all that stuff for $40-$50, and most important, that it will have USB out to drive your computer. That's the way to do it. And then you can take any kind of microphone. We make a PR20 that's $99, and it's amazing, amazing microphone. It outperforms almost some of the RE things. And so you take a microphone like that, you put it in a little mixer, come out of the USB out of it, and away you go. That is the way to do it.
I think the question that podcasters are going to ask, Bob, is, okay, so you're doing the USB function within the mixer. And so I think a lot of these guys are going to say, what's the difference? You're going to have the USB here. Where's the delta? And I think I know the answer, but what would your response to that question to them be?
Well, it's higher quality and you have equalization. That's right. The whole thing. You can mix things. If you're doing any podcasts of any quality, you're going to do other things. You're going to mix in things and have music at the beginning and the end. You can do all that so easily on these little mixers. So the question is, why not do it that way? Other than just have, I plugged it in and there I am. That's not the way to do it. And the quality is better because the microphone, all of the microphones that I've ever seen, heard, played with that are USB microphones, they sound terrible. They really do. And they're not very high quality microphone elements. That's my biggest problem with all of that is they're just inexpensive little elements stuck in with a USB out. Well, no, that's not the way. You're better than that. You deserve better than that. You're trying to bring a podcast onto the air. You want the best you can get, and you can do it very well with one of our dynamic mics and the little Behringer. Bingo, you're there. Works great.
One thing that people have always asked me, and they've always asked me, why do you use a condenser? And I've always used condenser mics. And for me, and I don't know if it's my voice, but when I use a dynamic mic, I don't get the vocal performance out of it that I like. And maybe, and I really think it's my voice. When I use a condenser mic, I get the performance that I like, and I've never been able to understand personally, because I love your mics, don't get me wrong. I've never been able to figure out why I've leaned towards the condensers more than the dynamics. I don't know if it's a mental thing, but whenever I use a dynamic mic, it seems like I'm always having to push it a lot harder, and I just don't get what I want out of it. Do you hear anyone ever say that? You know, what would you tell me that's having this either perception issue?
You put a PR30 or a PR40 in place, and you'll never go back, because the condenser has no rear rejection. It picks up everything in the room, and you don't need all that. And the PR30, PR40, they're amazing. They will outperform it when properly driven in the preamp, no problem. And of course, condensers have much more output. They have preamps in
them.
And you don't have as much gain. Well, no big deal. You got gain in the preamp. And you should have some kind of preamp or mixer. And they work beautifully. And that's why we're seeing so many. We've got over 1,000 broadcasters. We're talking about big time national radio stations that have tossed out all of their REs, all of their condensers, and they're using dynamics. They have no background noise because of the rear rejection, and they have gorgeous articulation, which you don't get from normal dynamic microphones. So that's something that you have to experiment, and you'll discover.
Yeah, that is true, though, about the rear rejection, because, you know, it'll pick up stuff real easy. If it's, you know, if I tap something on the table or bang something, it'll reverberate through the mic. You'll hear it. You'll never hear that in a dynamic mic, but you will in a condenser.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just because it's so sensitive. It just picks up every little sound that's around it. But I think you know, Todd, you were raising an interesting question about mics just in general around mics and different tonal voices. And I think that there is something to that. I think, you know, I think that the PR40, I've heard people say that the PR40 is great for speakers that have kind of lower voices, kind of lower frequency voices. But I don't know if that's really true or not, but I just have heard that. I don't know, Bob, is there any kind of reference to that, that some mics may be better for people that have high frequency voices versus kind of lower frequency voices?
No, that's what you have these little things up here for. You can make it sound any way you want. All you got to do is listen. See, that's the whole key. A lot of people don't listen. They don't. They haven't been taught to mentally dissect what they hear. Or they'll, what number do you set that on? No, don't do that. Listen to yourself, and you'll hear it. You really will. And no, I have not found that. I have a lot of ladies that are podcasters and commercial broadcasters. National networks got a couple of wonderful ladies down there, and they have pink PR40s.
That's awesome. So
absolutely.
So really, what you're saying is that the mixer needs to control that frequency response. And though I think a lot of podcasters don't know how to adjust that kind of stuff. I think they buy a mixer, they plug it into it. They don't really understand the subtleties of this stuff. And I think it's a little bit of a challenge for some, I think.
There again, Todd, it's the fact that it's tough. Nobody's really teaching them. It's all about buying gear, and it's ego and habit.
Yep.
And I am so thrilled that we're going to be able to do a really heavy-duty workshop. These are not sales seminars. I do workshops. I love teaching people. I've done it all my life. And that's how I learned all of this stuff, was listening to people. And Wednesday at the NMX show, we're going to do a workshop, and it's really wonderful. We'll be working in our booth with it too. So we have a booth there, and we're going to do the workshop Wednesday. I'm not sure what time, but it'll be on the show website. For any of you going to the NMX show, please pay attention to what's going on. There'll be other workshops too, and that's why you go to these conventions. You go to look at the gear, but you really want to search out some of these shows that teach you things. That's so very important. And maybe we have this show called Ham Nation on Leo's Network on Wednesday night. Of course, it's there all the time on replays. But we teach amateur radio operators how to do all this stuff. Maybe we need to do something for podcasters and help understand, because I think they get afraid, Rob. They get this stuff and, it's easy. I'll just plug this USB mic in. I'm okay. And they're afraid when they see all these knobs and buttons and what do they mean and all this. It's pretty simple once you get it laid out for you. That's what we're going to do at the show. I'm so excited about that. And it's part of the NAB, so you'll get to have a lot of fun there as well as learn some things, I think.
One thing. Go ahead, Rob.
Oh, it's just what kind of things are you going to cover in your workshop? What kind of general areas?
Well, one of the things that I address is how to use a microphone.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't really know how to use a microphone.
Yeah.
And we're going to get in, of course, the chain of driving it. What is the input? What's that mean? I got two volume controls. I got one on the top that says input. I got one down here that says main. They both do the same thing. No, they don't. Yeah, they raise my volume. No, they don't. And we have to help them through all of that. It's not hard. It's not difficult. You don't have to be an engineer. I certainly am not one. And then we make things happen, and then we get into frequencies. When you get into equalization, what are the frequencies and why? And those are all things that you never read anywhere. I don't understand that.
You know, there's There's a few people that are trying, and go ahead.
I've written several textbooks. One, the latest one's called The Heil Ham Radio Handbook. There's a whole chapter in there about frequency response, Fletcher-Munson curve. Oh my gosh, that it's all there. If you understand the Fletcher-Munson curve, these are two doctors back at Bell Labs in the 1930s. The telephone sounded terrible. They couldn't understand. Everything was right. And they put these two guys on, Bell Lab, put these two guys on the project. What did they find out? Why did it sound bad? These two things in the side of your head. They do not hear very well, frequency-wise. And the louder things get, the more flat, that kind of thing. If you understand what Dr. Fletcher and Dr. Munson discovered, then you're ahead of the game. And those are the kind of things we teach. They're very simple, but I never hear about them. And that's what we do in all of our workshops and in my books and so on. It's really the basis of making your station, your studio, your live sound great.
One thing that I found, Bob, is, you know, I spent 20 years in the military and we're on jets and pretty much the entire time. And I did try to protect my ears as much as possible from, you know, those frequencies. But, you know, after 20 years of working around jets, you're going to get a certain amount of frequency loss. So for my, you know, my challenge, and it's been in my studio, is really on the equalizer work. You know, I really was difficult for me to get the equalizer dialed in. And I kept telling my wife, come in, listen to this. Does this sound better than this? And we would do A-B testing. And I was recording stuff and listening. And I'm not joking, I probably spent a month trying to get it to where I thought it was right, and then went outside and had some analysis done by some other folks and made some additional tweaks. But you know, to get the, and I don't know how many band equalizer I've got back there, it's a DBX 216, so it's probably a 16 band equalizer, way overkill, but it's difficult to get that dialed in. And if you change a mic, you got to do it all over again. You have to completely go through the process again. But I think the equalizer part is the hardest part for me.
Yeah. And why are we still on this path of these, you know, these hardware equipment being so difficult for people to figure out and understand? Shouldn't there be some, I mean, technology has progressed to a point where it feels like a lot of that stuff shouldn't be something that somebody has to be doing or trying to figure out. Good audio quality should just be kind of built into these things somehow. And I guess, you know, Bob, I mean, what's your thought on kind of the next step for audio, you know, and audio recording and kind of pro level stuff? Are we going to move beyond the paradigm of what we have today with the type of, you know, Mackie mixers that are really fairly low-tech devices into something that's, you know, kind of next generation?
Well, it's what Dr. Fletcher and Dr. Munson discovered. It's not the hardware. It's not the software. It's your ears. And so when you set up a studio, you have to pay attention to what you're going to do. Every system is different. Every voice is different. Yeah. And the way to do that is listen to yourself. I like to record it.
Me too.
And then play it through speakers. Hmm. I use headphones at first. And once you get close, then I record it. And I play it back, and you make sure that playback is linear.
Yeah.
Just sticking it into a recorder and listen back. But hey, wait a minute! What kind of speakers are? You just don't stick it in some kind of little speaker that you use for your computer. You got to do this real time. I'm a JBL fan. I always have been since my live sound days, but. The situation is that when you use headphones, you've got to try it. Take your hands and put them over your ears and talk. What do you hear? Mm-hmm. Totally different because you have bone conduction and the canals are being non-resonant. It just gets real crazy. But when you do that, record yourself and play it through some real good monitor speakers, then you will know, and then you can equalize it properly. And it I think, is probably the best answer to that question, Todd.
Well, you know, that's probably the deal then. I've never used a speaker. I've always used, and I've got in-ear, you know, headphones right now, which are, you know, they're pretty high. Well, not high-end. They're a couple $100. And, but, you know, I you know, I've always, that answers a question that I probably had for a long time. I've always seen studios that had speakers. I'm like, yeah. Why aren't they just wearing headphones? But I think you just answered that. You can just hear more of the dynamic range if you got these things out of your ears. And like you said, you're getting the full effect. There's nothing like going to a concert and getting the full blast in your face as compared to listening to the concert later on a set of headphones. It's a totally different experience. So in that sense, it just makes sense.
Well, Todd, I think a lot of what happens with you know, with podcasts is they don't invest in high quality near field speakers either. True. I know I built a studio back early on with my radio show, and I went out and got the $500 near field studio speakers. You know, the small boxes that can sit on, you know, sit next to your mixer, and those are expensive. You know, to get really good quality sound and to be able to really test the full frequency range, you have to invest in some pretty good speakers. You know, most computer desktop speakers don't have anywhere near that capability to be able to hear all the frequency that you want to hear to be able to make those evaluations. So I think that's a key point, too.
Yeah, the post-editing. Go ahead.
The key here that I use is this little guy, the JBL.
Yeah. That's exactly what, yeah.
It's amazing.
Is that a near field speaker, Bob?
Low distortion. And I use those as near fields. Okay. And they work well. I have a small subwoofer that comes with it. That's the way to do it. And, of course, then you have larger speakers away from you. And you have to time align those. That's another situation. Phasing is incredibly important. People don't realize... phasing does it and you know, it's kind of sad because they'll say, two signals out of phase, it cancel. What does that mean? How does that affect you? I got a really great demo, and I never leave an audience until they've heard this. They're going to learn more in the next 2 minutes. Maybe they've learned all of their life, and it's simple. It's all of the things in science. It's been here forever. I'm going to unplug the PR40. There we go. And I plugged in a PR22. Now, I have a Y cable. I'm feeding these two microphones. I have two of them. This Y cable goes straight into the mixer, or the single cable. Then it comes out to a Y. And I'm driving the PR22 red and the PR22 white. They're exactly the same. And as you hear, they are the same. You sound exactly alike. If you put them together, they're in phase. They sound perfect. They just add about 3 decibels of level, because when you double the power, it's 3 dB. This is all science. Well, what happens if you have things out of phase and you're not paying attention? I have this magic little plug. This magic little plug I'm going to plug into this one microphone. Now, here's what happens. When you do that, when you do that, they both sound the same. Well, big deal, Al. What did you teach me? Here's the big deal. When you have two signals out of phase, what do you get? You cancel. They get here. I'm pulling them together. And when I talk into both of them,
wow.
You get nothing.
It's
really crazy. What's really nuts is you'll get a guy with a couple of microphones and he doesn't know if they're in or out of phase. So you can hear this weirdness going on when you're trying to hear things with both of them and they're out of phase. Sound. Speakers do it even worse. And so these are very simple things. It also is how we get our fabulous rear ejection, because I was taught by Paul Klipsch, the master of hi-fi, years ago. He was a great mentor for me. Paul taught me about all this and how important phasing was. That is how we get 40 dB a rear from all of our microphones. And again, with speakers, Todd, if you don't have those near fields, you don't have the main speakers all in phase, you got yourself a huge problem. I think you'll agree.
So can you get, so on a single mic operation, you shouldn't have, from a recording standpoint, a phase issue, or can you?
No, not unless you have some kind of silly reflection because you don't have good rear rejection. That's one of the big problems. I ran across it recently in a radio station. They had this awful, weird sound resonant. They couldn't get rid of it. They did all kinds of stuff. And they were using a condenser microphone. And it was picking it up off the glass that was about 10 feet away. It was really weird. And once we replaced it with a PR40, it was over. Stopped it.
Okay.
And it was all because of that phasing that was coming back off that glass into the back of that microphone. And once we stopped that, things cleared up.
Oh, this is too funny. Now, I got to tell a story. About 15 years ago, when I was still active duty in the Navy, I was working on an airplane. I had this major, major issue. And I worked on it for a week, couldn't fix it. But I was working with a group of people that one of the individuals was a fellow at Sandia National Labs. To be a fellow at Sandia National Labs, you have to be a big brain. I mean, very, very big. And I said, Brian, I got this problem. And I laid out what I had. And I said, he looked at it and he says, oh, you got a phase issue. So right here, put a 0 dB pad and that'll fix you. And I put a 0 dB pad in and it fixed me. I was good. And this guy looked at it for 30 seconds after I've been working this for a week and he fixed it. So here I am and I'm just laughing because Paul and I have been working on my audio and Paul says, you've got a phase issue. I don't understand what's going on with your phase issue. Where's this phase issue coming from? Because he's been analyzing my audio. What's directly in front of me? A monitor. So what we could be having, and I'm just like, you know, here we have the master. We, you know, like the guy at the Sandia National Lab who is the big, you know, big brain. I've got Bob Heil here who is the big brain. And in 30 seconds has told me probably 90%. I almost bet you that what the issue is that monitor right there, and this condenser mic, and the reflection coming right back into this side of the microphone.
Yep. It's happened to me several times. I get put on by stations, and they'll say, what's going on? And immediately, we all have big monitors in front of us, that glass, and if you don't have good rejection from the rear, you're going to get that coming back, and I just proved to you how important phasing is. It'll cancel and you're gone. You get all this all this weird stuff.
Yeah.
But it's very simple. It's just putting new technology to work, and that's what we're doing at Heil Sound.
Because what that will do is it'll cause that waveform to flatten out, right? Because you're basically applying rejection to it, right? Is that essentially what you're doing when that it's out of phase? Is you know, you got the signal here and it's pushing that back down the other way. Well, I think maybe it's time to pull the PR40 out of the box and see if that fixes the phase rejection issue. I'm just, the audience, you know, you guys, I know many of you are probably thinking, do I need to go out and buy a different mic now? And my goal from day one in doing my podcast, even 10 years ago, was I wanted to be able to sit down in the studio, turn things on, record, hit stop, and be about 95% done. I didn't want to have to go through and do a bunch of editing. I do a couple things now with the audio when it's done, but really my editing of the audio takes about 15 minutes. Is it perfect? No. Could I go in and clean up the hmms, ha's, oohs, wahs? Yeah, sure. But that wouldn't make it fun for me. So my goal always was to try to have the best gear so that the audio chain was good, so that I'd end up with a product that I didn't have to tweak too much. And I don't think a lot of folks appreciate that type of a mentality. They want to go cheap. Cheap isn't always, you know, this is your trade. This is what you're doing. I don't understand why people that are doing a podcast will settle on a inferior product, an inferior audio product. You're in their ears, you know, so why would you, you don't want to torture them. You want to make them go, you know, you want them to have a good experience. But I think you're, Bob, going back to your point on training, I think that's a big part of it. I think these podcasters just don't know.
Of course, they're not engineers. It's just like ham radio operators. They're not engineers. They just want to come in here, turn this thing on, and talk.
Yeah.
And that's what we've tried to do, and for decades, and written several books on it. And this latest book has really helped a lot of them because I get into audio a lot more. But there again, you just need to listen. Listen intently and dissect what you hear. That's important. You have to mentally listen to what's going on and make those changes. And don't be afraid to make those changes and see what happens. And you'll be amazed. But it all starts at the microphone. I do have to tell you that. And I just proved it to you. Just because it's got a big name or somebody uses it you admire, that doesn't make it right. What makes it right is the technology behind it. And we're so thankful that Joe Walsh guided me to do this. I never dreamed that we could have entered this pro market and do any kind of thing. We've been doing ham radio stuff for decades and decades. I've been a ham since 1956, and I didn't think we could do it. But I started looking and seeing, what are these guys doing? It's what they're not doing. And I'm going, maybe it is all about ego and habit. It is. And now it's all about performance. That's something you never read anymore in these guys, whatever ads or whatever blurbs. They don't talk about performance. We do. Performance is number one. You think Carrie Underwood would use our microphone for all these many years? You think we're going to get any of these really huge artists to use our stuff? No, it's not going to happen. And so we're very fortunate that we can give them new technology. And that's what we're going to talk about in Las Vegas. I just love to do workshops because I love to come out of that workshop when everybody going, wow, I learned something. Only if it's just one thing. But we're going to teach a lot of things, and they'll pick up a lot of things. And then we'll be at the booth there, too. We have a booth on the floor, and we'll be in that booth pretty much all day Wednesday. So that's the story, that we need to help you understand a little bit more about the technology of audio, not the brand, not the model, but the technology. And then once you learn that, you'll realize what brands are following this new technology.
Bob, could you give us some of your thoughts about what's happening in, you know, kind of the podcasting versus our radio space? I mean, you've been involved in, you know, the broadcast industry for a long time. What's your perspective on what's happening between broadcast radio and on-demand audio and podcasting? I mean, especially over the last 10 years, I mean, you've been doing a show with Leo for a long time, but give us your thoughts on what's happening in the space and where you see it going.
Well, I was at KMOX, CBS's flagship in St. Louis for 25 years. I was on the air with a thing called High Tech Heil. I was doing what Leo doing back starting in 1977. They would send me, CBS would send me to the CES and all these big shows. And I remember one really fun show we did. They gave me this disc, and this was all live. I said, wow, they gave me this disc, and we're going to throw away all of our Norelco tape recorders. It was the CD. We went through the satellite thing. I was very involved in the satellite industry. Then we got into cell phones, and I would report on all of this. It was so much fun. So I was on the other side of things those 25 years at KMOX. And it to me, what's happened today with the large network radio stations and your local stations, they're all trying to do podcasts, but it's just kind of a piece of their broadcast. They really don't do what I think should be done in a podcast. A podcast has to be an entity all of its own. Let's not talk about just cutting a piece of tape or piece of audio off of a CD or off of their computer that they, it's part of this show at 3:00. Let's do 15 minutes of it on the podcast. No, it has to be a total program from start to finish. And there are some podcasters, and you guys being one of them, you actually do a podcast that means something. It's not just a piece cut out of a broadcast somewhere to fill space. But they don't know what to do with it. That's the thing that I find. I get around a lot of radio stations tossing out their REs and their Shures and all this, putting PR40s in them, going, what are you guys doing? Oh, we're just doing this little. They don't get it, Todd. They don't get it. And hopefully someday it'll get to them. But in the meantime, there's a huge door open for podcasters to really make this happen. And you know what? They're doing it. More and more of them. They're getting better gear. They're getting they get more class in their production. It's not just some guy sitting in a dark basement with a spotlight over him. And I love that, because some of the shows I see are very well done. And so that, I think, is where the whole thing is going with podcasting. We're getting better, and that's what we should be doing.
This has been absolutely fantastic, Bob. I just, this has been, give us the background and a little walk down memory lane and, a little hint of what's coming for NMX and / NAB. And I think, too, we're talking with Rick Calvert just before you came on about the NAB show and New Media Expo. And a lot of these content creators have never, ever been to a show that is, kind of a combined deal that they're doing there. I think you've been to the NAB show many, many years. Can you give someone like one or two pieces of advice on how to cover that show and still keep their, keep their sanity, because it's so big? Any suggestions from a veteran going to that event?
Mm-hmm. First, you want to get really comfortable shoes. That's not the place is huge. Some of the booths, this has been going on for years, are so big they have helicopters in them. Two and three helicopters. We're talking about some company that sells a TV station, their newscopter. And you can go pick out newscopters just like you go pick out a car. Then they have a whole bunch of cars for news things. That's just the start. All the way down to little things that mean something. Little connectors, special cables, knobs, controls, mixers, power amps, speakers. You name it, man. It's there. And it's in the Las Vegas Convention Center. At one time, when I was covering that show for CBS, they told me it was something like 15 football fields. I think it's grown from there. You guys might even have more information on that today, but it just grows and grows and grows. And just the first thing you want to do is get the program and at the front door and sit down and unfold the map and figure out what you want to do. They've got it segmented. If you want to buy a helicopter, you go over in that part. If you want to buy a video camera, you go in that hall. You can't see it all. And there's where everybody makes a mistake. They just go running up and down all the aisles. Well, I don't know that you could cover all the aisles in a couple of days. You might on a sprint, but you want to be sure to not miss anything. So that map will help you. And mark, I always take a mark it down, and then I put it on a listing, and that listing can be anything. I'm still old school, guys. I still use the old CBS, notepad that you see them use. I still use that. I'm sorry, I'm an old guy.
Me too.
I don't know. I just find it better, and I write it down from that first view of the map where I want to go. We're hoping the first place you find is the Heil Sound booth over in the hall where the podcasters are, because we're going to spend some time there. And then you want to look at the workshops. Oh, my. They just go on for days and days and days and days. And you want to check that out also. Don't miss the workshops. And I guess one of the things that you'll be hearing from what I'm saying, you're not going to do it in a day. So hopefully we'll have a couple of days, but value your time and don't spend a whole lot of time talking where you don't want to talk, because you're going to find some place that you want to do spend a lot of time in. But that's the whole key, is plan it well. And I go to the website of the NAB. I'll do that here in the next few days and put the map out there, and they'll have a list of all the suppliers. Try to circle and write down where I want to go and what I want to see. That's important.
Yeah, I don't think I could have said it any better. And, you know, the thing that I love about the show, too, is as you're walking down those aisles, the big booths are big and beautiful, but I'm always looking at the 10x10s because I'm looking for the guy that's there on his credit card. He spent his last dime to get to the show, and he's got something cool in his booth that he has invented or made. I have found so many incredible discoveries, and it could be anything from a connector to a piece of gear. And this guy may have something that's wowza, but because he doesn't have a big name behind him, you may overlook him. Don't overlook those guys in those 10x10 booths. They're doing some incredible things, because all those big companies started in those 10x10 booths, and someone was willing enough to just take a look and say, oh, whoa, what is that? And the next thing you know, they're in a 100x100 or acre by acre or whatever acre size they may be.
Acre by acre.
Absolutely.
Well, we're here at the end of the show. Bob, thanks for coming on. I definitely appreciate it. And we should have done this earlier, but folks, make sure you get over to heilsound.com, heilsound.com. We got the pro audio and amateur radio section. So just click on the pro radio side. That's going to take you right into the website, and you're going to find all these beautiful mics. And for the ham operators out there too, don't forget too that they've got the full line of amateur products. Anything you want to add on that, Bob, before we go?
No, there's a lot of information in that website. We're constantly adding it, and so you'll want to look at some of that, especially the books. Some of the books, we have all of the pages up of it. All starts at the microphone and that kind of stuff, and a lot of pictures. And in closing, I have to tell you that I'm very blessed, very honored that several years ago Heil Sound was invited to become one of the main features of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We're the only manufacturer in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They have a huge room with many of the things that I designed with Joe Walsh. The very first talk box that I did for him and Peter Frampton, and the mixer we built for Peter Townsend for Quadrophenia, some of the special speakers we did, mixers we did for the Grateful Dead. It's an amazing display. If you ever get to Cleveland, you want to see it. It's on the third floor right beside the Les Paul display. And we got there because we continually try to bring new technology. I did it back in those days. I'm still doing it. And we're extremely blessed that we continue to do this. And the Rock Hall was way, way out there. And there's been so many other things. But the main thing is you want to look at our line. It's not just another microphone. It's a new technology. And the first word and the key word of our stuff is performance. I'm always here. That's my job. Sarah Heil, my wife, she owns and runs this company today. Her and Greg and Steve and Jerry and Donna, they're just amazing people that keep it going. They say, you just stay here and invent stuff. So that's what I do, invent stuff. And spend time answering questions. Yesterday I had right at 130 that I answered. And I do answer every email. Bob@heilsound.com gets it. Real simple. Bob@heilsound, H-E-I-L-S-O-U-N-D. And I will answer you. Don't be shy. No questions dumb the first time. I really thank you, Rob and Todd. I let's do it again, and hopefully we'll meet up somewhere out there, and we'll have some fun. That's the main thing, is have fun, but do it right.
And Bob, when you see Paul, buy him a beer. He really was the guy that really helped you get your foot in the door here in the space, and you guys would have been successful otherwise. I know that, but. He definitely got you guys kicked off in a big way in the for the podcasters at least. But hey, thank you for coming on. I definitely appreciate your time. And Rob, any closing comments?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, and then go check out Bob's show on Twit called Ham Nation. So when does that show air live, Bob?
We do it every Wednesday night at 6 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock here in the Midwest, and it's fun, and we have some really intelligent people. One of the latest has been Tamitha. She's an astrophysicist or I can't even pronounce what she does. She comes on every week and tells us what's happening in the atmosphere, the sunspot cycles, what's going on at the moment, how signals are going to react. She is amazing. And we just brought her on. We have a professional broadcaster in the New Orleans area. He's on the air every day. Don Wilbanks and George Thomas does my soup, milk, and solder. He builds stuff. And the best teacher in the world is Gordon West of Amateur Radio License. And we just go on and on. And then we got Valerie. She's a DX queen. She goes out to some little island somewhere that nobody even lives. And her and a whole team of people, that's part of ham radio that we can talk to them. It's an amazing hobby. And you will love the show. It's a lot of fun. You don't even have to be a ham, because we have a lot of fun, make it fun. And I appreciate Leo giving us all that space, but we have become one of the top shows on the Twit Network, so we're very blessed by all of that.
Yeah. That makes you want to become a ham just hearing you talk.
That's right.
Over 1,000 people have gotten their license because of that show, and that's kind of fun. And we have a segment called New Ham. We just had a couple last week. We got one that's 6 years old. It's going to be on here in a couple of days. 6 years old. He's on the air talking. It's
That's
amazing.
Cool. Very, very cool.
That's very cool.
For the rest of you, we're out next week. Obviously, we're going to be in Vegas, and we're trying to figure out what we're going to do for the following week. So we'll let you know on the website what the schedule is. But we are definitely going to be probably going to be releasing our session if they let us record it at NAB. Yeah. And so maybe there will be some content up midweek, but we definitely appreciate everyone. And don't forget, you can email Rob or I here, Todd or Rob at newmediashow.com. Again, congratulations to our ticket winner who got the VIP tickets to New Media Expo. Let's see if I can bring it up real quick here. And no, of course not. I don't have it loaded. That was, Bill Conrad. Congratulations on that. And but I hope you enjoyed the show today. I sure have myself personally. Had a good time. And again, thanks to Rick Calvert for coming on, and Bob as well for your time. I know it's very, very valuable. But from us here at New Media Expo. We'll see you next time. Rob?
Yeah, it's great. Thank you for tuning in. And if you're going to the New Media Expo, go check out our panel, which is a recording of the New Media Show called The State of Podcasting. It's on Tuesday the 14th at 11 a.m.
And, of course, you can come by the booth. I'll be at the Raw Voice Blueberry booth, and we'll be. I'll also have a session on Thursday, or actually Wednesday, I think. It's 10 years, 1,000 episodes, and my journey for basically how that's all evolved. Everyone take care. We'll see you next time here on The New Media Show.